Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom, what up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, coming to you from the beautiful, sunny city of Los Angeles, California, and we have an incredible show for you. Trent Dilfer is going to join us upcoming at 20 after the hour. We'll talk to the Super Bowl champion, former quarterback, about the fun in the dysfunction in Cleveland. Get to that in a moment. If you haven't been paying attention to sports radio, man, have you missed a wild morning in Cleveland sports? A bad team making all the headlines on a Monday. Instead of talking about Ty Montgomery's personal meltdown, or talking about the Rams remaining undefeated, or even the Red Sox being the rightful world champion and what it means for Clayton Kershaw and Dave Roberts, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get to the Browns in a second. Lamar Miller from the suddenly resurgent and first place Houston Texans will join us next hour. So too will Nick Swisher, and Michael Lombardi will join us. He, formerly a member of Cleveland's front office, will give us a sense of what their future direction is going to be. There's a lot to get to. And I honestly, when we started planning and plotting out this show, it was one of those deals to which I kept saying to myself, don't talk about the Browns, don't talk about the Browns, don't talk about the Browns. And it wasn't because I'm an anti-Brown. I don't care enough about the Cleveland Browns to not mention the Cleveland Browns. It was just that, like, look, they're not a playoff team. They've been horrible the past 2 years, and they're at least competitive, although marginally so, and not going to make the playoffs this year. Why would you lead your show middle of the NFL season with a franchise like that? I'll tell you why in a second. But I want to talk about the Red Sox winning the World Series and whether or not they're actually as good as the 119 wins will tell you. I wanted to talk about how Ty Lue is basically getting blessed to collect money for losses he would have taken on his resume. I wanted to talk about the Rams being the Packers and how Ty Montgomery's ill-timed hero ball combined with Mason Crosby missing all those field goals going back several weeks ago. And you run the risk of Aaron Rodgers missing the playoffs because of those two players. I wanted to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, who the world seems to be kind of creeping up on their offense. They're not as dominant as they should, you would think, have been. Or the Carolina Panthers, who were all hailing Cam Newton as some sort of hero and savior and MVP candidate. But it's not close. But the team is really, really good. Yet we don't consider them to be some elite team because they're the second best team in their division. Or it's the Saints, who won and only have one loss on their season. And they went into Minnesota and won the game. But I kind of think that was more about Thielen's fumble, Stephon Diggs quitting on a route, and Laquon Treadwell penalty and ill-timed drop. I think it's more about that. But instead, I'm dragged back in talking about the Cleveland Browns. That's because the news was just too good. Right? It's just too good. It's kind of like, I don't know how you guys ordered a restaurant you've never been to, but I always do this, you know, one meal before you die. And the waitress or waiter will say, excuse me? He said, no, if you're going to eat at your restaurant one time and then you're going to die, you can only eat one more time, what will you eat? And whether it's an entree, you know, like I was in Tallahassee, Florida on Friday. And I went and I sat at this restaurant at a hotel called The Lodge. And they were like, look, the shrimp and grits is amazing. Now, I like shrimp and grits, but shrimp and grits, if you know how it's made, is not exactly good for you, right? There's grits, there's butter, there's shrimp, there's gravy, there's bacon. It's all on top. It's amazing, but it should come with an angioplasty. It really should. It's like if you say, what's good for dessert? And you're like, look, rhubarb pie here is amazing. Do you like rhubarb pie? Like, I've never thought of myself as liking rhubarb pie, but I'll try it because you said it's so good. That's what we have with Cleveland. They're not a great football team. They're not. They're an interesting football team, and they're a team that America thinks we know because we saw them on Hard Knocks. And we have Baker Mayfield, and we have Hugh Jackson, who somehow kept his job with the new general manager in spite of the fact he won one game in 2 years. Like, it was all kinds of weirdness going on. Like, I'd rather talk about what is Tampa doing bailing on Jameis Winston when they owe him $20 million next year and playing Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we know is average at best when you start him. But instead, I'm brought back in, and it's because the rhubarb pie here is so good. It's because the shrimp and grits is so incredibly delicious. The Browns aren't good for you. But the Browns today not only fired Hugh Jackson, their head coach, but then they fired the offensive coordinator as well. I go, what? Yeah, that actually happened. That actually happened. See, there was a standoff between Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, who was hired by John Dorsey. Remember, Todd Haley never quite fit in Pittsburgh. He and Ben Roethlisberger never got along. Todd Haley, relieved of his duties in Pittsburgh, somehow ends up in Cleveland. And from the moment you turned on Hard Knocks on HBO, their reality show, you were like, those two guys don't see eye. Those guys, the offensive coordinator and the head coach, they don't get along. I understand that some things are done for television, some things are done for reality shows, some things, or it's like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, where some guys are on there simply to make a second career for themselves, not actually to win her or his hand, right? But I think a blind man could see that Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley are just wired differently. From how many reps guys got to the stuff they were running, and even you go back a week and a half ago when Hugh Jackson was like, hey, I'm going to take over the offense now. The stories persist that Todd Haley did whatever the hell Todd Haley wanted to do. And if you want to know why you lose so many close games, this is why. The difference in the NFL is a play here, a play there. It's no different than in watching Major League Baseball. I know the Red Sox won in five games, but a decision here, a play there, a hit there, an error here, that's what determines who's a champion, and now all of a sudden the Dodgers have all these questions. For much of the game yesterday, the Packers outplayed the Rams in the Coliseum, which was 50-50 Rams fans, Packer fans. But here's a play. The Packers choose on their own 1 yard line after incredible punt to run the football, something they don't do well when you have two of the best defensive linemen in the game, and Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. And shocker here, they get a safety. So instead of being up 10-0 and putting the ball in the hands of the best quarterback in the NFL, they run the football, get stuffed. Not only did they give up 2 points, but now they got to punt it away to that Rams offense. That's one play. Ty Montgomery misses a block on the last possession the Packers had. The football causes a sack, keeps them off track. They have to punt. Rams end up scoring a touchdown. That's two plays. And then Ty Montgomery fumbles. That's on the ensuing kickoff. That's three plays. And then, oh yeah, by the way, they might have gotten the ball back down six if they could get a stop on third down. They can't. Todd Gurley goes around the end, could have scored a touchdown instead. Takes a knee. Everybody champions him, even though he really mathematically should have gone into the end zone. That's it. Four plays. If any of those four plays go differently, Packers beat the Rams. That's the difference between winning and losing. And then you look at the Cleveland Browns. Sure, they got kicking issues. But I'm sure if I had a Cleveland Brown friend call in, he'd be like, look, I can pick out four plays in which they're 5-2 instead of 2-5. You're right. And the reason that losing teams lose is when your offense coordinator and your head coach can't get along. The beauty to the entire thing is Todd Haley also relieved of his duties, and they hire Greg Williams to be the interim head coach. Greg Williams is the defensive coordinator. Greg Williams has been a bunch of places, also a guy that has a tendency to come in and kind of wear out his welcome. Now, they have the best turnover ratio in the NFL because they don't throw it a ton, they run it a ton, and their defense is a bunch of ball hawks. That's Greg Williams' style that helped him win a Super Bowl when he was in New Orleans shortly before Bountygate, which he was suspended by the NFL for telling guys to bring the wood, and if said player was taken out of the game, they'd get a cash bonus. And you can sit here and tell me it didn't happen, with the exception of the fact there's audio tapes of him and videotapes of him doing the cash symbol right before the Packers game. And then when Brett Favre goes out of the game, guy comes over the sideline, says, pay me my money. So it absolutely happened. But here's the kicker. Greg Williams' team, which is loaded with talent on the defensive side of the football, 24th in points per game, 28th in yards allowed per game, 26th in yards per game, pass yards per game, 28th in rush yards per game, 30th in total yards allowed this season at 3,316. And they're 30th this season in total rush yards with 1,111. And oh yeah, by the way, his best defensive player, the former number one overall pick, just questioned his game plan against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who they lost to yet again yesterday. I understand what Jimmy Haslam is doing. Right? Jimmy Haslam, I'm a parent of twins. You come back home, they're 12 years old now. Sometimes you let them stay home alone. And you come home and they're crying and they're fighting and they're both saying, he did, she did it. No, she did it. That's what happened. Jimmy Haslam walks in and his head coach is saying, I can't run an offense. We can't win games because of Todd Haley. And Todd Haley's like, look, we can't win games because of Hugh Jackson. And instead of picking sides, he put them both on punishment. And in this case, the only thing you can do is fire both. I'm completely against firing a coach mid-season because it simply promotes the dysfunction within an organization. But in this particular case, I kind of get it. Wait. You two can't get along. You two can't coexist. And as much as you could say, hey, look, you should fire Todd Haley, even though he was hired by the GM, the fact is, if you're Hugh Jackson and you can't command a room, like Todd Haley not doing what you asked him to do is actually a sign of your lack of leadership. So normally I wouldn't talk about the Cleveland Browns. Normally I wouldn't have had shrimp and grits. Normally I wouldn't eat rhubarb pie for dessert. But man, the shrimp and grits was so good. And man, this Brown stuff is so... I mean, only... And then the Cavs are sitting there going, hey, we just fired Ty Lue. He went to 3 NBA finals. We owe him a bunch of money. They're 0-6. We fired... Oh, and then Larry Drew doesn't want to be the interim head coach unless he gets a long-term contract. I don't believe in curses, except for Cleveland. And I know that many people believe that LeBron overcame the curse. No. This sort of stuff, it shows the superhuman efforts of Kyrie and LeBron. This is extraterrestrial sort of stuff. This is something that has the Lake Erie used to be polluted, famously caught on fire. They've cleaned it up, but whatever it is has leaked into the water. Man, do I love you, Cleveland. I love your rhubarb pie.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It's really important to remember. I read Mike Freeman's article from Bleacher Report in which he said that Kirk Cousins has been meh. He's second in the league in passing. He's having a very, very good year. They're a field goal kicker away from being in first place all alone in their division. And if you watched last night, Adam Thielen, who's an incredible story, had a terrible fumble deep, deep in Saints territory. He hasn't had Dalvin Cook much of the year. He's playing without two starting offensive linemen. Stephon Diggs quit on a route, and that ends up being a pick six. Like, here's what people forget, though. This is really, really important. I mentioned it with Trent Dilfer. You're like, well, I don't like how much money Kirk Cousins makes. This is the problem with that Parade magazine. Right? Parade magazine, which if you used to get a newspaper, you get in the Sunday paper once a year. They would have the what people make. Once you find out what somebody makes, you have a completely different evaluation of them as people and of their job. Oh, I could do that. I would do that. I could do that for that much money. Well, it's crazy how much they make. Remember, Kirk Cousins bet on himself 2 years in a row in D.C. He took the franchise tag 2 years in a row, in which he made over $20 million both years. And then he was the best free agent on the market with limited other quarterbacks on the market. And so you're sitting there with the Vikings, having played in the NFC Championship game, you're like, well, we don't have a high first-round pick, so none of the quarterbacks are going to be around. And this is not a job for a rookie quarterback anyway. And our choices are Case Keenum, trading for Alex Smith, or going all in on Kirk Cousins. Or A.J. McCarron. These are your Tyrod Taylor. These are your legit options. So in comparison to Aaron Rodgers, would I take Kirk Cousins? No. But you know who wasn't available as a free agent this summer? Aaron Rodgers. In comparison to Drew Brees, and look, Drew Brees wasn't great much of the night last night. But I would take Drew Brees. I would take Tom Brady. You're damn right I would. You know who is not available last year as a free agent? That would be Drew Brees and Tom Brady. They're not available. So you're paid what the market will bear. And the truth is they didn't have to. They weren't even the top bidder. The Jets were. They were just in the ballpark of what he wanted. He wanted 3 years guaranteed. They got that. I actually think he's achieved an appropriate level of success for his contract and for the fact he was the number one free agent. He's the best of those quarterbacks. And simply looking at record and drawing a, well, they get the same record now as they had last year, and they had Case Keenum, and they could have kept Case Keenum. Case Keenum can't play. He's a backup who can be a starter sometimes. He's a fuzzier version of Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's going to get his coach fired in Denver. So you could say all of these things or whatever, but they're not the same. They're much better offensively. He's a better quarterback. And if you want to hold against him the money that he's making, you have to have the context of he's a free agent, starting quarterbacks, Pro Bowl level, top 15 quarterbacks never become available in free agency, ever. Even next year, I mean, maybe Derek Carr's on the market. But he hasn't had the career to this point of a Kirk Cousins. You know, who would, even if he was this coming year and you had Blake Bortles and Jameis Winston and Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins, you'd still probably have Cousins first. So who would you pick and why'd you pick him? Context does matter.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Nick Swisher would never butcher Matt Viskersian's name. That's because he's a champ. He makes coffee a little bit nervous. He's got some energy. Even after the, if there's one guy who stayed up for all 18 innings and broke down every pitch, it was Nick Swisher. Swish, did the Dodgers lose this one or the Red Sox win the series?
I think if you're looking at the whole grand scheme of things, I think some people could say both ways. I feel like you could look at the moves that Dave Roberts and the organization made not working out. Or at the end of the day, you can look and just say the Boston Red Sox were just a better squad. I mean, think about it, man. They slayed the 100-win Yankees. They just ran through the defending champs, the Astros, right? And they just crushed the two-time NL defending champs. If that's not the best team in the game, then I'm not quite sure what is. Because what those guys did, not only offensively and defensively, but for me, the biggest thing that stands out is your stars weren't the guys that won the World Series for you. It was your role players, your bench guys, your Steve Pierce's, your Jackie Bradley Jr.'s. Your, you know, question mark was David Price. You didn't know how he was going to pitch in the postseason. So for all of that help to come, on top of having J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts in your lineup, there's a reason why the Red Sox won 108 games in the regular season, and there's a reason why they won the World Series.
Oh, I'm not disputing that they're the better team, but there were several winnable games that, you know, you, what keeps you up at night, what makes you, anybody who's played high-level sports, and Nick Swisher's won a World Series joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox MLB analyst. Anybody who's ever played high-level sports, it's the ones that you lost you felt like you let get away, right?
Yeah,
and
totally.
They have several in Boston and at home, maybe even take away last night because the bullpen was fried and Kershaw just does not have nearly the stuff he used to have. But letting those get away, how much at the time when it took place before – whether it's Madsen or some of the other errors, right. How much were you critical in the moment of Dave Roberts' moves?
You know what, man? I'm not really a monster critical, moves guy. I feel like we can always play Monday morning quarterback. I think you got to look at the numbers. I feel like with a guy like Dave Roberts, he's so used to impacting the game. He's so used to affecting the game by making changes. You know, whether that's putting a new pitcher in or whether that's bringing up a pinch hitter. I think he got caught up so much in that sort of a game, just like he was in the NLCS with the Milwaukee Brewers. And then he comes over and playing the Boston Red Sox, where he didn't need to make as many of those moves. And that sometimes you just got to let the boys play. Sometimes in the American League, you just let things roll out. It's not as effective as it is in the National League because you have to make more moves. The double switches, the pitcher hits, the whole nine. In the American League game, it's completely different. Now, with all that being said, if you think about it, the Los Angeles Dodgers were a couple big hits away from turning that series around. But at the end of the day, hey, Boston pitching was way too good.
How about David Price? What did he do differently? I mean, here's a guy who earned the criticism that he had been getting, and he goes out and pitches an absolute gem. What did he do?
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. You know, DG, bro, I mean, you know he started off, man, 0-9 in his first 11 postseason starts. David Price, 0-9? You don't hear that very often. So I think the transformation and the transition happened game four against the Houston Astros when he was in the bullpen warming up. I'm telling you, man, he said something happened. And since then, whether it was a little bit of his delivery, whether it was his arm angle, whatever it was, all of a sudden the velocity started to go up. The command started to go up. The use of his changeup started to go up. And when you have a devastating changeup like David Price has, because I know I was in that batter's box, when you see that 83, 86 mile an hour changeup come in, that makes that 93 to 95 mile an hour fastball so much harder. And if you look at his last start, 5 punch outs all on the fastball. So to be able to see him do what he did, man, was awesome. And it's nice to see him put all that postseason struggle to bed.
No question about it. What do you do? How does the Kershaw conversation really take place? He got 3 days. He can opt out. What's the real conversation that's had?
Well, I think if you're Clayton Kershaw, man, you got to go to where you're going to be happy. I mean, you've got 2 years left and $65 million. Oh, holy smokes, man. That's a whole lot of cheese. Either way, if you're Clayton Kershaw, you got to figure out what you want. Because if he opts out, why is he opting out? He's either going to opt out for more years or more money. And I don't think he needs to do that. If I'm Clayton Kershaw, I'm staying right there with the Los Angeles Dodgers, man. I am the face of the franchise. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me when Michael Jordan went to the Wizards. And it just didn't look right. I think if Clayton Kershaw put on another uniform, it just wouldn't be that. When I think of Clayton Kershaw, I think of guys like Cal Ripken, Derek Jeter, guys that spent their entire careers with one team, and this guy has that opportunity to do that. I would hope that he would weigh his options big time because, obviously, when you're in a position like Los Angeles, there's a lot of heat, there's a lot of pressure. But at the end of the day, man, you got to be there because you're going to go somewhere else and you're going to look back and you're going to say, man, I really wish I was back with the Dodgers. So I think for him, he's got a lot of thinking to do. He's got great representation. I'm sure he has great people leading him in the right direction. But it's all going to be interesting to see what happens here in the next, 48 to 72 hours.
Is somebody really going to give him, is somebody really going to give him more money and more years? I mean, I would guess more years, but not more money, right? So even if it's, he's got 2 years left at, upwards of, $32, $33 million. So it feels crazy to think that you would leave that much money over 2 years when you'll be a free agent and still be able to get another contract if you want to keep pitching, as opposed to, $100 million maybe over four or five to go to a place like Texas where you're not going to win. It's not a pitcher's ballpark. And, you make a little bit more money for and more guaranteed and more on taxes, but is that really what it's about? I mean, how much money can you possibly spend?
I think that's what it boils down to. How much money do you really need? I mean, do you want to compete for championships or do you want to make some money? And for me, man, I would always want to compete for championships. Are you kidding me? Come on. I mean, to have the opportunity to go to the World Series back-to-back years, that doesn't happen very often. As a matter of fact, not at all. But to see the success that he's had during the regular season has been phenomenal, and the Los Angeles Dodgers aren't anywhere close to being able to fight for that World Series championship if he's not your number one.
Bryce Harper's agent is Scott Boras. He told the Yes Network, "We got a deal in place. I don't want to spoil it. Let him tell you." It would be technically he's not allowed to negotiate a deal yet with anybody else. Is it the Nats or are you hearing somebody else?
Hey, it was at the interview with Michael Kay.
Yeah.
Come on, Scott Boras. You know you don't have no deal done right now. No way Bryce Harper knows exactly where he's going yet, unless it's an unbelievable contract offered by the Washington Nationals to bring him back. That would be my first thought. If he says there's a deal on the table, it's from the Nationals, in my opinion. Because, by the way, Scott Boras, he ain't signing no deal right now. He's never signed an early deal ever for any of his guys. And if you're Bryce Harper, you want that attention. You want the buzz, right? And so I feel like with the offseason going to go the way it usually does, we'll see him sign after Christmas, maybe January, February, when all this stuff comes out. Because you got to, I mean, Scott Boras, man, he doesn't do that. That's not his style, man. He wants the headlines. He wants the money. He wants all that. He wants just as much, I guess you could say, love as Bryce Harper would get, man. Scott Boras, he ain't scared to let you know what he's thinking, man, and he ain't scared to throw out some hooks and some stories that may not be true.
Last thing, it appears the Dodgers are still going to bring Dave Roberts back. I guess here's my fear, right? So you go mostly based upon analytics and your decisions this year, and you either stick with that, and that's like who you're going to be, or
correct.
Or you like overcorrect, and now you only go by gut. Like it feels like they're in a really hard spot in the future in the playoffs, aren't they?
Well, I think it was tough this year, man, because you went up against Boston, and I think the analytics of everything just didn't pan out. I think the thing about it is like you said, I mean, if that's the type of team you are, and that's how you play all season long, that's how you run your rosters, that's how you do all that stuff, and then all of a sudden you get to the World Series and you struggle, it's hard to change the way you do things, man. People are creatures of habit. Organizations have a standard of which they do things, right? So a lot of heat's been put on Dave Roberts because of the decisions he makes. But in my mind, I think that's an organizational thing. Yeah. Running out an all right-handed lineup, that's an organizational thing, man. That's a million to billion-dollar decision that you're doing. So I know Dave Roberts is catching a lot of heat, and rightfully so because he is the manager. But, dude, don't lose that guy. He's one of the best in the game. And even though he didn't get the job done 2 years in a row, it still doesn't mean that he can't get it done in the future. They've got an unbelievable team. He's an unbelievable man. He's a great communicator, and he knows the game of baseball. Because think about it. If you get rid of Dave Roberts now, who are you going to bring over there?
It's a great
question. No one really pops to mind.
It's a great question. Last thing, Manny Machado. I don't know. I mean, look, you go back to, what was it, game four? Devers made an incredible throw, but he's blowing. He's blowing a bubble running down to first base. Like I just, he had the one that went off the wall, which he got into a single because he thought it was a home run. Like I just, I feel like this was, and Manny Machado hit the ball well, right?
I
feel like he really hurt his value. He's not my kind. This like hustling isn't always his cup of tea. He's not my cup of tea.
He's not Johnny Hustle. That's what he said.
Yes.
So I think with Manny Machado, man, here's the deal. Do I think he's going to be the shortstop for the Los Angeles Dodgers next year? No, I don't. Do I think he's going to find himself back in the American League game? I do. And here's another thing that I hope happens. I hope that he switches back from shortstop to third base.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is an electric third baseman. As good as he is as a shortstop, I think he's way better as a third baseman. So I feel like the things that happened this postseason with Manny, right? Teams maybe might be leery, but then again, man, he came out and said exactly who he was. We talked about it a second ago. He says he's not Mr. Johnny Hustle. He's not going to be diving into bases like that. You know, I when I think of Manny Machado, I think of somebody like a Draymond Green, and this is why, right? Not all of our players can be the heroes, right? You've got to have some villains. You've got to have some instigators. And Draymond Green is one of those guys. But people still love Draymond Green.
Yeah, but Draymond Green plays hard. Like, the idea of, you want to make $250 million? That's cool. But, I don't know if the Angels, for example, if they're going to spend some money. But the Angels have the opposite of that. They have a Mike Trout who has all that talent, and he has gotten hurt playing hard. Right. And I just wonder if, you know, if that act works in another franchise when you're going to be the highest paid guy.
Well, and obviously it doesn't. I mean, obviously you saw what happened in the postseason, you know, and in the World Series. I mean, you bring over a guy like Manny Machado, you think he's going to help you run the table. And I can promise you, if he would have helped them win the World Series, there's no doubt he would have been back in L.A., but because of everything that happened, and not only that, you know, With superstars like that, sometimes a little baggage comes along with that, right?
No.
And so I think if you're a general manager and owner, you've got to weigh the pros with the cons, because at the end of the day, that kid can swing the pole and he can play some baseball. It's just you've got to be able to get in there and say, hey, I need you to change around your style or maybe your approach to the game a little bit.
Swish, you're the best. Thanks for joining us, man.
You're the man, DG, bro. Hope everything's well, man. Hope you're working on that tennis game, baby.
We're gonna play some tennis. Something tells me that Swisher covers the court quite well. Thanks so much, Swish.
I'm working on it, baby. I'm working.
That's Nick Swisher, Fox MLB analyst.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Who would know better about being general manager of the Cleveland Browns than a former general manager of the Cleveland Browns? Of course, author of a new book, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL, on sale now. Then Michael Lombardi, who joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Michael, when you heard the story that not only was Hugh Jackson out, but Todd Haley was out as well, what was your reaction?
You know, I mean, look, I you don't want anybody to get fired in their jobs, but I think Hugh's had a large enough sample size going into this season that, you know, he wasn't a head coach. I mean, you can talk about, you know, obstacles, but when you're winless and only have one win after two seasons, I mean, that's pretty much telling about your ability to be the head coach. And there is this thing called the Peter Principle. You know, certain guys move up to certain levels, they can't handle it, and unfortunately it doesn't work out. So I think it's way late. I think now they're behind the eight ball and trying to figure out what they're going to do. They make Greg Williams the interim coach. They certainly don't want Greg Williams to be the full-time coach. They're going to have to fix the offense. You know, they got Baker Mayfield there, who the new coach coming in didn't pick Baker Mayfield. You know, so they're going to try to find somebody who loves Baker Mayfield. It's just, to me, you know, oftentimes in anything we do in life, the words too late usually resonate with mistakes, and this is too late.
Okay, so just help me out, though. Why was Todd Haley hired to begin with? Like, I know, you know, Dorsey's been in the league a while. I think Haley was gone from Kansas City by the time he got there. Like, that seemed like an odd fit to begin with.
Well, look, it was the idea of the general manager, John Dorsey, to hire a guy to come in and run the offense and let Hugh be the head coach, Hugh be the CEO of the team. But the reality here is what would Hugh do? I talked about it on my podcast, GM Street. I mean, what does Hugh do Monday through Friday? He's not going to go tell Haley what to do, because Haley took the job under the understanding he could run the offense. And so whenever you have this much sub-coordinators within your subcontractors within your organization, you're asking for trouble. You're really asking for a lot of trouble. So this is the biggest problem. It was set up wrong from the beginning. And, you know, Hugh's claim to fame is he's an offensive guru, but, you know, you've never seen that before. You've never seen any evidence to support the guru. And so it's problems. And so, you know, this should have happened in the offseason, but for whatever reason, Jimmy Haslam thought he saw a great coach in Hugh Jackson and wanted to keep him.
Okay, so everyone, you know, it's copycat league, right? So everyone wants to get a young quarterback. First year doesn't work out. The next year you go and hire some young offensive whippersnapper, or maybe not young, but, you know, Matt Nagy and what he's done. You look at Sean McVay, obviously that's the copycat of everybody with what the Rams have done. And so now everybody, how can we get a Nagy? How can we get a McVay? Is it Lincoln Riley? I mean, who is out there that could be that guy for Baker Mayfield?
Well, look, I think what Cleveland needs is a culture. I don't think Cleveland needs somebody to satisfy Baker Mayfield. I mean, in my book's all about building a culture. My book's all about building an organization, and it has nothing to do with catering to the quarterback. It's about getting the culture. I mean, Jimmy Haslam, you know, has got the ability. You know, when you look to me in college football, you see guys who have developed programs in college football, and they build programs, and that's what Cleveland needs more than anything. Now, Dorsey's the general manager, and so whoever comes in is going to have to understand that, and Dorsey's going to have to understand, you know, to get a top-flight coach, you're going to have to allow him. I think they could, to me, I would do whatever it took to get Dabo Sweeney to come to Cleveland. I don't think you can get Dabo Sweeney. I think they're talking Lincoln Riley. I think I'd take an experienced guy like Dabo Sweeney to come in there and build a program. They need a culture. There's no better culture builder in America than Dabo Sweeney.
And Dabo's unbelievable. He is really, really remarkable, and that's a name that others have not brought up. Michael Lombardi joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I felt like the Packers' defense was really good. I didn't like the play call that led to the safety. And Ty Montgomery obviously missed the block that got them off track. And then he decides to return a kick that he didn't need to, just take a knee. Outside of the fact that Montgomery playing hero ball ended any chance of pulling off an upset, what's your reaction to how the Packers played against the Rams?
Look, I thought the Packers played as well as you can. I mean, obviously the safeties, you know, when you're backed up like that, you got to sneak that ball out of there. It's tough to hand it off, especially against that front, or you got to hard count them. Because really, what happens if you jump off sides, they move it 1 inch back? You know, what are you losing, right? So you got to really hard count. And certainly you could hard count Sue all the time because he just loves to jump. He can't wait to jump off sides. So, you know, that was a tough game situation. I think the situational football cost him. That situation cost him. And then you can say what you want. I mean, I know somebody says they told Ty Montgomery. But, you know, look, you can't allow that. If they did tell Ty Montgomery and he's still on the team today or by the trading deadline tomorrow, then there's something wrong with the Packers. You got to trade him or cut him, you know. And because if he just was not listening to what you told him to do and he cost you the game, he's got to go.
Yeah, I think he's gone. I mean, that time it couldn't have been worse. What do you make of the Rams' offense? I mean, they have so much weaponry. Obviously, Gurley is a special talent. But it did struggle to get on track yesterday. The rookie for Green Bay looked amazing. Jair Alexander, I think the kid from Louisville, had a tremendous game. But is the league catching up to what Sean McVay is doing this season?
Well, they scored 28 points. I mean, look, what the Packers did yesterday is they hit Goff, something that typically not a lot of teams do. They got to Goff. And, you know, Gurley still averaged 4.6 a carry, and they were very effective at doing that. But I think, and the Rams were 8 for 18 on third down. But I think the key number there is that the Packers forced 18 third downs. They forced 18 third downs, which is so critical. And then they played really good in the red zone. You know, they held the Rams for 2 for 4 in the red zone, 1 for 2 in goal to goal situations, and that's the recipe to win. That's the recipe to keep the game in the 20s. Going into that game, the Packers have over the five games, the Packers have given up 28 points. If you throw out the Buffalo game, the six Buffalo games, right? So just throw that game out. All the other opponents they played, they've given up 28.1 points a game. So they gave up what they averaged for everybody else. They just did it well. And I'm disappointed in really the drive that cost the Packers the game that no one talks about is when they got the ball back with the lead. They needed to extend the lead.
Yep.
And that's the drive that Montgomery missed the block on. And that really cost them. I mean, that drive there in the fourth quarter, when they come back out, and, you know, they've got the ball and they've got a chance to, you know, they got a third and six and you get sacked for a 10-yard loss. That's a killer. That's an absolute killer because you needed to score points there.
Michael Lombardi joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What's your assessment of Kirk Cousins to date?
Well, look, I think Kirk Cousins, I think Minnesota was hurt last night. I think missing Dalvin Cook hurts Kirk Cousins. I think we cannot minimize that. I think there's no doubt about that. Then he gets screwed up on the route coming across for the touchdown. You know, P.J. Williams picks it off. The receiver stops. And certainly there's some elements that happen. But I think more than anything, I think when you look at the Vikings, I don't think they were 100% going into that game. I mean, Thielen has the fumble. They're getting ready to score 10 to the half. I mean, you can't make mistakes. I mean, that's the reality. You can't make mistakes. You do that, you're going to lose games. And that's what they did. They turned the ball. This is why they lost to Buffalo. So, you know, it circles back to Cousins. You know, the guy's throwing the ball really well. He's only got 10 incompletions in the game, but yet he makes the interception for the touchdown. They fumble in the red zone. Those two plays, they killed their team and they killed their chance. If I would have told you, Doug, that Drew Brees is going to throw for 120 yards and the Saints were going to win, you would have said you're crazy, right?
Yeah.
And yet they did.
Yeah. But both those plays were like you know, Diggs quit on a crossing route against man to man. And Thielen fumbled. Like those, I'm with everybody on Cousins does have a ceiling that's lower than the star quarterbacks, but I think he's played really well, and I don't think either of those two mistakes were on him.
I agree. Look, I think he takes so much heat for making so much money. It's not his fault. If you want to be mad at anybody, be mad at Bruce Allen, the general manager of the Washington Redskins. He's the one who messed up the contract. Don't apologize. You know, Kirk Cousins doesn't have to. He was franchised. He didn't ask for it. He got franchised. He got put in this income bracket by the Redskins thinking that they could outsmart his agents. So, look, Kirk Cousins has given them everything they have. I mean, I don't think that's the problem. I mean, look, everybody loves Saquon Barkley. He's a great player. He's one of the highest paid backs, guaranteed money in the league. The Giants are 1-6. To me, why aren't you giving him a hard time?
What do you do with Jameis Winston if you're Tampa?
If I'm Tampa Bay, I'm going to trade him. I'm going to try to trade him. But the problem is Tampa Bay doesn't have any real awareness or any reality of what he's worth. you know, right now he's on the books next year for $20 million guaranteed for skill. I wrote about this in The Athletic today. So what that means, Doug, if he plays this year and say he gets hurt, and I don't wish this on anyone, but let's just say he gets hurt and he tears his knee and his ACL. That means next year his $20 million is guaranteed. They are at a high, high risk if they play this player for the rest of the year of exposing themselves to $20 million, okay, because he could get hurt. And if he does, and if he's not able to pass their end-of-the-year physical, which is at the end of the season, or their beginning physical, they can't take that skill off. They can't take that injury off of them. It becomes guaranteed, and they owe it to him. So if you could trade him between now and tomorrow, which no team's going to take that contract on and have that liability, I don't think, and then take the turnovers on as well, I don't think they'll do that. I think Tampa's in for the harsh reality that the player they think is their franchise, no one else does.
Josh Gordon he's going to play tonight against the Bills, but he's going to miss some series because apparently he was late to a team event. This is the same Josh Gordon that comes in with some strikes against him. You know Bill Belichick really, really well. You've worked with and for Bill Belichick. What's your assessment of just how close Josh Gordon is from getting run off from the Patriots?
Look, you know, I said this from the beginning. Volume is going to be the hardest thing for Josh Gordon. You know, it's not doing it one time. I mean, that's why all those helmets are out there in the SEAL base of the Navy SEALs. A lot of guys can go through SEAL training for a day. They can do it for 2 days. They can do it for 3 days. But then they got to do it for 30 straight days. It wears on you. And that's what I'm concerned about with Josh Gordon. I'm not concerned about him early. I'm concerned about him when it matters most in November and December.
Michael, great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. Always, always informative.
Thank you, buddy.